Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at dukehealth.org.
Hey, it's Lindsay Foster Thomas. I'm the content director here at North Carolina Public Radio WUNC. And that means I oversee, among other things, our podcast portfolio. I'm just here today to say thank you. Thanks for being a Tested listener and finding the value in getting exposure to so many stories from around our state through your earbuds. I'm so proud of all our podcasts at WUNC. And today, I'd like to introduce you to a new one. It's called Me and My Muslim Friends. The name is kind of self-explanatory, and the premise is as uncomplicated as it sounds. Host Yasmin Bindas invites us to listen in on convos happening in Muslim communities across America and around the world, and learn about the nuances of identity within those communities. We're so excited to have Me and My Muslim Friends as part of the WUNC family. I think you'll love it. Let me get out of the way now and let you listen. But before I go, let me just quickly tell you about one really easy, effective way to support Tested and all the great podcasts at WUNC, like Embodied, Creep, Great Grief, and Me and My Muslim Friends. And that's with a contribution to WUNC. It makes what we do possible. And it's kind of cool to know that you played an essential part in bringing these shows to life. All you need to know is at WUNC.org right now. And once again, thank you.
On today's episode of Me and My Muslim Friends, I have two guests. They represent a group within the Muslim community that may be undercovered when you think of Muslims. As a Muslim myself, I grew up with a Shia mom and a Sunni dad. I'm half Iranian and half Algerian. So I was always aware that our community was diverse. But there are Muslims who don't come from the Middle East or Asia. I have with me two Latina converts, Shirley and Katia, and today we're going to hear about their experiences and cultures and how they came to Islam and what that means for our community.
I'm Shirley. I am Peruvian. Both my parents are from Peru, and they immigrated here in the late 80s. I was born in New Jersey and then lived my whole life until I moved in 2007 to North Carolina. And once I went to NC State to study psychology, that's when I started learning more about Muslims. And then it wasn't until September of 2011 that I converted to Islam. You know, after I converted, I shortly got married, and I got married to an Algerian as well, actually. So now we have two kids, a daughter, she's 4, and then a son that's about to be 3 soon.
Hello, my name is Katia. I was born in Mexico. Both of my parents, of course, are Mexican. We moved here when I was 10 years old. I was raised Christian. My father was a pastor. So I did convert in 2015. I'm still learning. And I do have a son. He's 8 years old. And I'm a single mother.
So you both have kids and you're both Latina converts. How did you two even meet?
You want to go? So I've always wanted to know more about other converts, especially Latina converts, just because, you know, our experiences would be similar, or just at least know that we have the same background. It's always good to find somebody like in the Hispanic, or, you know, if you want to talk to Algerians, like your own community. And everyone did talk about Katia, and I was like, I don't know who she is. Like, where is she? And then I think at the time she was living in Greensboro.
Yes.
And I would see that we had like mutual friends, like Durhani and Gulali, and like, I love them so much. So I was
Oh my gosh, I know those people.
Aren't they awesome?
Yes. I grew up with them, kind of. They're like
too.
A family friend. Malali is like one of my mom's friends.
Nice.
Okay, small world. Continue. they were really sweet people, and like they were the ones that actually helped me when I was trying to convert, and like the ones I would hang out with. So, mm-hmm. Just through a lot of those people, like I would keep hearing her name, and I was like, you know, I want to meet her. And then I kind of stalked her on Facebook, and then I added her on Facebook. And then from there, we kind of messaged a little bit, and that's when I actually finally met her. So it's only been like a couple months.
Do you want to add anything, Katia?
So when I converted, I had never heard of Latino Muslims. Literally, I thought I was the only person in the world that wanted to convert to Islam, because I researched and I studied Islam for years. And the first person I met was when I converted, like the day I took my Shahada, which is the confession of faith. I met, I think it was a Cuban Muslim sister. And she was like, no, there's actually Latino people that have converted to Islam, and there's like people here in Raleigh locally. And I was like, are you serious? After that, I started stalking people online that were, and actually, I do get a lot of friend requests or follow requests on Instagram from Latino Muslims. And I realized that we have that need of connecting with our own people, and just like Shirley said, like you want to connect with someone on the struggles that you have, and just the process of becoming Muslim and learning more, and try not to lose your identity as Latino and your heritage, because you don't want to feel like you're betraying or leaving that behind.
I'm kind of really interested in knowing, you know, why Islam? Like, why did you decide to choose this religion later on in life?
So my parents, we come from a Catholic background, but I wouldn't say that we were super religious. We weren't the type that went to church every Sunday. We would have it like in the house, like I believe it was more culture rather than religion. So we would have, you know, holy water in the house, and like we would do, you know, rituals. If I was sick, my mom would pray with holy water. And, you know, all these little traditions, but we weren't really religious. We don't read the Bible a lot. So I realized, like, when I was growing up, I guess I was always trying to find something, but I didn't know it. You know, I would have this phase where I was trying to look up Buddhism and trying to find, like, all these things to be connected more, and I never really found it. And to be honest, I don't think I was really interested in finding a true, true faith until when I went to NC State. And then one day I was just talking in the car with a friend, and she was discussing when she went to Umrah. And like when she started talking, she was crying. And I was like, you know what? I kind of want that type of spiritual connection. Like I don't have it. I don't cry. I don't feel any type of, I guess, emotion when I talk about Christianity like that. But I never really read the Quran. I feel like the people around me were the reason why I wanted to convert. And the way that they always remembered God, you know, when they would say, Insha'Allah, Alhamdulillah, Bismillah, like all of these things, they always remembered God. And I feel like that's the final thing that I was actually missing and what I was always looking for, but didn't know it.
How about your story, Katia?
I guess that's what's different in my journey. As I was growing up, God was always a very present concept in my life. I heard my dad preach about God, about the stories of the prophets. And so at first, I avoided, I guess, like as soon as I would start to think of converting, I would get scared and I would think like, no, like, what am I thinking? And I would get away from it. The time that I decided to convert was in a time where I was down. I was very depressed. And at that time, I was not practicing anything. I was not practicing Christianity. I didn't want anything to do with religion. So I knew that in order to find a connection with God, I had to pray. And that's when I was like, okay, let me go back to Islam because I'm in between. And let me study it and let me cross it out. That was my goal. let me find something that will get me completely away from it so I can cross it out and go back to just praying. And that was when I started studying again. And I practiced Ramadan for 1 week before converting. And I prayed the way that Muslims pray with a YouTube video. And I fasted, and it gave me the peace that I was looking for. And so a month later, I converted. And I can tell you that when I converted, when I took my Shahada, I was not sure of what I was doing. When I said my Shahada, then I had the peace of I did the right thing.
So me, I'm Muslim, but I haven't, and this is something that I think about a lot, I will say, I haven't made the decision to wear a hijab yet. So it's something that I am really interested to know, like, what was it that clicked with other people? I mean, just from my own journey, I'm confused how it's like you just take a shahada and like the same hour decide to put it on or something. So I just kind of want to know, you know, your journey to wearing hijab, like, when did you decide to take that additional step?
For me, wearing hijab was not automatic. I did not wear hijab right after I converted. I wore it like 8 months after. I never wanted to be pointed out like, oh, she converted because of a man, or, you know, she wears hijab because of that. Like, I've always been an independent woman, and I feel like because I had the choice to wear it, I wore it. And I feel like if somebody would have told me that I had to wear it, I wouldn't have worn it.
So I'm the same way. I'm exactly the same way. So I'm like, if one more person tells me I need to be wearing this, I'm not going to wear it. Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. So I feel like for me, it was a step of rebellion. Like, if I converted to Islam, like, I'm going to go full at it. And it just reminds me of, okay, this is not something appropriate to wear. It doesn't look right with hijab, or this is not a place where a hijabi would look right in. And so for me, it's like a limit, like a line that reminds me personally where I should be and what I shouldn't be doing, or what I shouldn't be portraying myself as.
Right. So for those who might not know, like, a hijab is not just the scarf that you wear. It also is kind of more of a full dress code where you, like, can't wear a hijab with a mini skirt. And that's what she means by it wouldn't look right. Yes. So when you're wearing hijab, you wear, you know, longer clothing, more modest clothing. And it would also be really strange. I'm sure this happens, but it'd be really strange to see, like, a hijabi in a club because, you know, like, it kind of, what she means by that is it's monitoring where you are and also like what you're wearing to keep it kind of more cohesive with how you're presenting yourself.
Yes. So the moment, well, I started wearing it around Muslims, and then I would just go home, take it off, go to work without it. When I applied for, I was applying for jobs, and I was going to interviews with hijab to see if I could have luck. The first two, they never called me back. Mm. The third interview I had, I went without it. And they gave me the job. It was a temp job. So I worked there for 3 months, and they offered me a full-time job. The first day of a full-time job, I wore my hijab. And so...
Got them! So, that's so funny.
Everybody asked me, like, they were so surprised and shocked to see me with hijab, like, the next day. And they did, a lot of them asked me, and, you know, wow, you weren't wearing hijab yesterday.
Right.
So that was one of the things that allowed me to be more confident in who I am and the decisions I take, because I did a lot of explaining when I was in the process of converting. And now I feel like I don't have to give anyone explanations of what I do. And I don't have to convince anybody that I'm Muslim or convince anybody that I'm Mexican. I'm Mexican and I am Muslim because I chose to be.
So what about you, Shirley? Can you tell me about, you know, how you also decided to add hijab to part of your conversion?
Yeah. So like Katia, I didn't wear the hijab as soon as I converted. So I had worn it probably 9 or 10 months afterwards. And I mean, just like Katia was saying, I feel like there's also that extra pressure, you know, even though a lot of the Muslims are like, oh yeah, you converted, that's awesome. Another part of them are also saying, did you do it for somebody? And for me, I felt like that was especially the case because I had converted in September. And then in December, I actually met the person I was going to end up marrying. And then we got married that June. So everything was kind of fast paced. Mm-hmm. But it all just kind of happened, you know, smoothly. I felt like everything was kind of going back to back. And then I also felt like a lot of people were questioning, like, did she really convert for a guy? And it's also kind of frustrating because I wouldn't choose to potentially maybe damage my relationship with my family who are like I'm very close with just for a guy. And mm-hmm. the same thing would be with a hijab. I wouldn't wear a hijab for a guy either. But I started thinking about it and I knew it was something that I wanted to do in the future. Especially as I was getting closer to, you know, getting married, I was thinking about, you know, I kind of want to wear hijab before I have kids. So I would start wearing it every Friday because that was the only day I felt comfortable to wear it because I would go to Jumu'ah at the masjid, the mosque on Fridays. It's kind of like a silly story. But one night it was raining, and I'm talking about like thunderstorm raining. One of the thunder actually like really hit close to the house, and I almost thought I was going to die. SubhanAllah, like I was like, I don't want to die, and I haven't worn a hijab, and it's something I've been actually thinking about in the back of my head for so long. And it was around June, July when that thunderstorm happened, and then that next day I started wearing hijab.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll just wear it.
I just want to know from both of you, do you feel like you've had to give something up? Like, what other changes in your life from before you were Muslim and after did you kind of just have to, like, let go of?
Okay, so I was raised, like I said, in a very religious family. And we were actually, I would say, a little bit over the top. So we couldn't wear pants. We couldn't wear makeup. We couldn't wear earrings. We couldn't cut our hair. Wow. We had to wear like long skirts all the time. There was no music in the house. So at the age of 13, my dad left the house from here. And then my family kind of like just fell apart completely. Mm-hmm. And I found myself with this burst bubble because I grew up like, don't do this, don't do that. And then all of a sudden, dad's gone. My mom's like working all the time. And I find myself with trying to connect with someone because I was in a new country because I didn't know the language very well. None of my classes did I have someone that was Hispanic. I started skipping school. My mom was not in the house like so much to the point that she wouldn't even get the messages that I was not in school. So I started doing things that were, you know, on the other extreme, like drinking. And so when I kind of like healed from all this, it was not hard for me to say, okay, this is not what I want in my life, and this is just not something, it doesn't go with my life. One, because now I'm a mom, and second, because it hasn't brought me any good.
What about you, Shirley? Anything that you had to let go of?
So my story is, I guess, a little bit different than Katia's. Like, our family, my parents weren't really much drinkers or anything, like, too crazy. But, you know, we did have, you know, parias, like, little parties. And, like, you know, we were, like, the traditional Hispanic family, like, music every Saturday. And we'd be dancing, doing salsa and all that stuff. So, and I guess maybe sometimes it's taboo to talk about it, but like in Hispanic culture, like we drink like when we're 14 years old. Like it's just like natural. It's Christmas time here. Have a wine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Saturday night. We're having a family barbecue. Here you go. Have like a sip of beer. Like it was just, it's you're like, you're nodding because you know, it's like, it's a Hispanic yes. culture and it's not. So it was just kind of normal. But then like once I was actually legally able to do it, I just never did it. But because of all that was happening, I don't really miss it it doesn't bother me at all. And I'm not really, I was never much of a drinker anyway at that point. I'd rather have like sweet tea. But that was probably the only thing. And then just the parties, like going to dancing. And sometimes you just, it would just look, I guess, awkward for like a hijabi to be dancing like bachata with somebody because it's such a close, intimate dance. Like those are the only things that I feel like we probably had to give up. But at the same time, it's, I just don't think it was a big deal when you put things into perspective. It's not really that big of a deal.
Can you tell me, well, I want to know first how you kind of managed this balance with your family and just how they reacted. I'm just really interested to know more about their response. Shirley, do you want to start this time?
Like kind of like how I mentioned earlier, you know, I've always going through like that phase. Like I had an emo phase in high school and then I had, I was always looking for something. I don't know what I was looking for, to be honest, in high school, but it was always something. So then when I went ahead and told Mama, you know, hey, Mom, I converted, she was just kind of like, okay, like, yeah, okay, whatever, you know, it's just one of your other phases that you had. Right. And because I wasn't wearing hijab, it didn't really solidify that I actually converted. And they were always like, you know, why? Like, are you, you know, what is, what does Islam have that, you know, Catholicism doesn't have? And I try to tell her it's not that one lacks something than the other. It was just what gives you that sense of peace that Katia was saying. Like, when you read it, Christianity and, you know, Islam are very similar. Of course, there's, like, some bigger differences. But when you look at it, the stories of the prophets are, you know, the same mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had actually bought them a Quran in Spanish. So they do read it and, you know, they'll ask me questions here and there. My mom's very, like I said, she's very traditional. When you see her house, like if it's Easter, everything is like Easter decorated, you know, fall and Thanksgiving and Christmas, like that's just her thing. Everyone knows that if you go to my mom's house in a specific season, the house is going to be decked out. Like she's the Kim Kardashian of Hispanics. But I had to tell her from the beginning, you know, when it comes to like religious holidays, I don't want to confuse her and I don't want to confuse the kids. So like I can't have my kids come on December, like the 25th of Christmas, and then, you know, have her give them a gift because, you know, they're grandparents, they want to give their children gifts. But I try to make it up by going to holidays that aren't religious, like Thanksgiving. You know, we make Thanksgiving even more special or even bigger. And, you know, any other thing, birthdays, whatever is not, you know, Christian related, like I try to make it a lot better. But I think that's probably the hardest thing for them is that time of the year.
What about you, Katia?
For me, at the time that I converted, I was already on my own. I was away from my mom. I was away from my dad. They've been in Mexico since I was 16. And so because of the strong Christian household that I grew in, I explained to them before converting. So I called my dad and I told him. And the only thing he said was that he believed that I was confused and that maybe I had seen like bad things in church and that's why like I was disappointed and I was just looking for something to replace it. The only thing I told him was just pray for me so that God can guide me. And that was like kind of like the only in-depth conversation we've had of Islam. Like other than that, every time we talk, we leave Islam out. Mm. I try not to be pushy about it. And because they're not disrespectful towards me being Muslim, I don't mind if they don't want to talk about it. And with my sister, she's the one that lives here in North Carolina. She lives in Greensboro. With her, it has been interesting. but she supports me. Like she'll cook and not have any pork in the house, and she knows I don't drink, and so right. And now the one that she's challenging is my son. Every time we go, she says are you going to come for Christmas, Jaden? And Jaden's like, yeah, but that doesn't mean we're celebrating it. And then she will say, why? She's like, because we're Muslims. And aww, she says, but why are you Muslim? Why? And so he's like, because we believe in God. And she says, we believe in God too, but we're not Muslims. And so she challenges him, and that brings questions to him that he asks me. And I like that because he's learning more. So we're at that point with my family. I still come over for Christmas, but I tell them, like, I don't give out presents. Don't give me presents. Mm-hmm. And I'm not at that point where I can say no to my family because it's only hard. Have my sister here.
Now that you've talked to me about your process of becoming a Muslim, I'm really curious to know if you feel a part of the Muslim community and if you've had any challenges as converts in feeling like you belong. Shirley, oh my gosh, you look like you have so much you want to say about this.
So I feel like when I first converted, I felt like everyone wanted to be like my best friend, and, you know, they wanted to text you all the time. But I feel like it's almost like a phase of every convert, like, afterwards, once they kind of find their click, like, everyone just forgets about you. Like, you don't talk to them as much. And then, you know, if they see you, like, oh, hey, it's been a long time. And it's kind of like, you have my phone if you really want to, like, talk to me, you know?
Right. It's a two-way street. Yeah.
Right. So it's not really like, hey, how are you? You know, do you need any help? You know, do you want me to, like, I don't know, help you with Quran? Like, you know, just some of the struggles that, you know, a convert might go through. Like, I don't think that a lot of them kind of go out, not that they would go out of their way, but, like, just say, hey, I'm here if you need me. And I think a lot of people do forget, like, you know, we kind of are giving up a lot. You know, when we're with our family, I feel like we have to work double as hard to show that we're the same person. But then when we're with our Muslim people, you know, our Muslim friends, it's kind of like we're working double to show that, you know, we either did it for the right reasons, or that we're knowledgeable, or, you know, that we're super pious, like, we don't make mistakes. And I mean, there's days that, like, it's a struggle to get up and just pray.
Yeah, I think our Muslim community needs, like, a training of, you know, like, how to integrate people into your, to give them a sense of community more. I feel like this might be just my own judgment, but I feel like churches are so much better at that.
Yeah.
I've experienced, like, both sides where someone is, like, so amazed that I converted, and they just want to be close to me, and they want to know why and how. And then I have the other side of people where they look at me like, are you here just because you married someone? Or I've met both. Alhamdulillah, it has never hurt me to feel like somebody does not accept me. Like, I'm at a point where I'm doing me, and I'm trying to do the changes that I need to make, and I'm not here to show anybody that I'm a Muslim or that I'm enough Mexican. And I learned to present my Islam without having to put down somebody else's religion or somebody else's identity, because I've experienced that. And so, to answer your question, I don't feel like I'm part of the community, but I have many people that I have created that bond with, and I'm so okay with it. Like, I understand people are at different levels of spirituality, of acceptance, and I'm not here to change anybody's mind.
Thank you for listening to me and my Muslim friends. Whether or not you have a Muslim friend, you'll find one here. Our podcast is recorded in WUNC Studios in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. It is produced by Liz Schlemmer and Aditi Bonlamudi. Original music is by Dale Ruffin and Grant Livesay. Additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Yasmin Bendas. See you next time.